Here's a reminder that the comments, views, and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of WCOM, its board, and underwriters. From Main Street to Wall Street, the issues impacting your business, we're talking leadership, technology, politics, regulation, and success stories that inspire. It's time to focus on business. I'm your host, author, speaker, entrepreneur, and business consultant, Lee Strickland. I'm the CEO of Focus Resources and 2S Innovations, and founder of the Network for Business Growth. I've also created the Core Business Transformation System. And now today's program.
Well, my guest today is here to talk about work-life balance, innovations in legal firm business models, and attorneys as entrepreneurs. He's Andrew Fisher, attorney at law with the Forrest Firm. Andrew has practiced law in New Jersey with a large corporate group there, the law firm of Cole Schatz. And he represented closely held and middle market companies there in general corporate matters, mergers, and acquisitions. In 2007, Andrew relocated to North Carolina with his wife when she received a surgical residency at UNC. And then he joined the law firm of Smith Anderson. At Smith Anderson, he represented startup, venture-backed, and growth companies in a broad range of industries. He advised them on the formation, general corporate matters, angel and venture financing, licensing, and merger and acquisitions. After 6 years at Smith Anderson, his wife transferred to Columbus, Ohio, and he followed there. She had a fellowship training there. And Andrew spent a year as a stay-at-home dad, and he's going to tell us that's the toughest job he ever had, being a stay-at-home dad to his one-year-old son. And then 2014, he and his wife moved back to the Triangle, and he began pursuing his entrepreneurial dreams, launching a pair of cupcake bakeries. And those franchise locations of Small Cakes are in Durham and Cary. And Andrew joined the Forrest Firm this year, 2016, and he re-entered the legal ranks, leveraging his combined business and legal experience to counsel entrepreneurs and executives at early stage and growth companies on a range of legal matters. He remains active in the operations of Small Cakes, dividing his time among the practice of law, his business, and his family. He holds a Bachelor of Arts degree in architecture from Princeton University, a law degree from Rutgers University School of Law, with concentrations in banking, corporate finance, and securities law. He's a member of the North Carolina Bar and is admitted to practice in North Carolina, New York, and New Jersey. And he lives a busy life, and he's taking time out today to join us on Focus on Business. Andrew, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lee. It's great to be here.
So, lawyers as entrepreneurs, that's not always something we think about, to be perfectly honest. And so why was it your dream? How are you combining it? And why the Forrest Firm?
For sure. Well, so I think, a lot of lawyers enter the profession and they love it. And a lot of them enter the profession and they have developed a great skill set. And so they stick with it, even if they're not in love with it. And a lot of lawyers look from the outside at other businesses that they are counseling and think to themselves, wow, that'd be great if I could do that one day, right? And I think, I was lucky when I moved here to North Carolina and joined Smith Anderson. I entered the startup group at Smith Anderson, which was a small group. And I was exposed to a lot of brand new entrepreneurs, a lot of startup companies that were coming out of the universities here or coming out of incubators here in Durham and Raleigh and Chapel Hill. And that sort of sparked the idea in me that it was possible to do it, to become an entrepreneur.
Right.
I knew over time that I had seen just, one small slice of what it was like to be an entrepreneur, right? I mean, I'm helping these startup companies get themselves formed and get themselves financed. But when it comes to what they actually produce, their product and their development process, I didn't see too much of it, occasional glimpses.
It was that black box, that
definitely,
mystery box. Right?
Definitely. And that's there's something interesting about that, right? I mean, you see these guys, they're putting in, guys and girls and women, they're putting in hours and hours of time to this project.
It's not a 9-to-5 job.
Not at all. It's all day. It's all night. It's for no pay for the most part, or for whatever you can wrangle for a stipend, or what kind of space you can get to work in.
And you're describing my client base.
That's it, right? We know it's hard, so there must be something, a huge draw for them. And that's something I really was interested in. That was always in the back of my mind that starting a business sounded like a great way to experience what those folks were experiencing.
Well, we've had a lot of your colleagues from the Forrest Firm here, and the Forrest Firm is not doing law the traditional legal business model. So talk about being in that large legal firm or large legal firms you've been in, and then talk about the Forest firm and the differences in how they do business and that business model for those organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Forest firm was founded just 5-ish years ago with the understanding that James Forest, the founder, brought to the firm that the big traditional big firm corporate law firm model was not set up to serve the new model companies the way that in the most efficient way. And I think that was the driver for James, and that's the driver that we, the lawyers who've been joining the firm since it was founded, we bring that knowledge to the firm. So, a big law firm model, the ideal client is a huge corporate client that's going to bring continuous business every day. They have new contracts they're entering into. They have new divisions that have setup needs or financing needs.
New IP, new IP, everything percolating.
A new loan agreement, credit agreement with a big bank for review. All that stuff is just constantly coming in. But most companies in this country, the vast majority, are much smaller than that. Yeah. and have much more, I won't say straightforward, but they have relatively predictable legal needs within the niche of startup companies. And so, James and now the firm as a whole has taken on the idea that we can cut back on some of the trappings that a large law firm will spend money on, like big Class A office space and legal assistance for every lawyer and a mail room with a big copier and all that stuff. And sort of thought to ourselves, well,
the infrastructure.
All that infrastructure is very expensive for a law firm. So we took a lesson out of the playbook of the startup companies that we were counseling and said, we have a laptop which gives you incredible power for communication, for document generation, for just creating efficiencies, both as working between the lawyers and working between the lawyers and the clients. And so that's what we do. I mean, I spent some time this morning working from a coffee shop, just like most
entrepreneurs. That's my corner office most days, right?
Yeah. It's one of the things I like the most about having made the transition from a law firm with a great office. I mean, it was beautiful. Mm-hmm. It was in downtown Raleigh, had a great view, and it was nice to look at the view, but more often than not, I was looking at my computer screen. And
you weren't seeing the view. You didn't have time to look up.
Not a whole lot of time to look up the billable hour requirements or, that's part of the model of the big law firm is you're spending a lot of time looking at the computer screen and making sure that you're billing time. And the same thing is true in a small firm. I mean, it's important to keep up with your practice keep your practice moving along. And so I'm definitely, I'm billing hours, but I can do it over a nice cup of coffee and maybe chatting up with a friend that I run into at the coffee shop or out and about.
Yeah, I know I've had my business for 14 years. And so technically it's a home-based business, but I never seem to be there unless I'm doing research or I'm writing or something like that. I'm with the clients.
Yes.
And so that's important.
100%. I mean, that's something that actually I did do a fair amount of, even at Smith Anderson, because I was in the startup group. Right. Is getting out to meet the clients. You have to go find them where they are working, which is in their incubators or at their business school events,
or at their corner office at the local coffee shop.
Exactly. I've been, I think, to every Starbucks and Carolina Cafe and Panera, for a meeting, for business in the area over the last.
I know
years.
I got so bad a couple years ago that there was one particular restaurant around the streets of South Point. I was table 47. The moment I walked in, it was just take Ms. Strickland to table 47. It was just like they knew I was going to be there for a while. I was just going to switch clients in and out, but I would be there for a while. And, and they were fine with that. That's that entrepreneurial atmosphere, even with, the non-traditional or the traditional restaurants and stuff like that. You come and you can park. I think they call it Coleman Party of Two. You've come to camp.
Right, exactly. Right. And I think those businesses, to their credit, have filled that need for people here who work in that type of economy.
Well, and it starts conversations, because I know I've met potential clients just by casual conversation in the coffee shop.
Absolutely.
And what they're doing. And you hear them struggling with some accounting concept, or they're putting in a grant application. It's like, hey, wait a minute. This is what that means, right?
That's and for sure. Yeah, I definitely have run into potential clients or even more frequently, I think it's somebody I'm talking to and they have another friend come in and say, hey, oh yeah, I'm talking to Andrew Fisher about his practice and what we're doing with the business here. And that's a good way to get intros.
Well, and it's a dynamic business model because, you know, James and them, full disclosure, I used to be with a large law firm and I'm with a forest firm for most of my legal needs in the state. And so it's interesting that the perspective you each bring, because I think I've probably had most of you guys as guests on the show, your specialty, sometimes you overlap a little bit, but it's complementary. And so that you can exchange ideas. You know, it's not, if I need an IP attorney, there's an IP attorney. If I need a real estate attorney, there's a real estate attorney. And so it's much more dynamic than picking up the firm, you know, calling the large firm and they were looking to see, well, let me see who has it, but that person I might need might be in Virginia Beach or they might be in New York City.
Yes. Yep. So that's, you know, that has benefits and drawbacks of the large firm is that you have the specialists who are, you know, maybe super sub-specialists even within, right. You know, you don't have to have a tax lawyer, but you have a you know, a federal tax
lawyer. An S-corporation flow through tax lawyer.
Exactly. Somebody who knows that yes. stuff. And to be honest, that's right. nice yes. from the client's perspective if they have a specific question, and it's nice for the lawyer who has, you know, oh gosh, I've got this issue that I really need to track down. And so I could research it, which I'm sort of starting from scratch right. or not quite scratch, but, or I can call up this person and say, hey, can I just have 5 minutes of your time to talk about this issue?
You know, my business model, I have clients in Canada, Mexico, and 46 states. Mm. So it's always been to configure the resources around the client, what they specifically needed. So it's like, it's fun to call out and say, okay, I need an attorney that knows California labor law related to X. Mm-hmm. And somewhere in the network, someone will come up with a name and those kind of things. And so I always like sending out my little emails to my friends and all the accounting firms and stuff saying, need this in your area. And then we configure it based on what the client needs, which is what the force firm really does in that legal model, and that we're not getting the entire large building in 12 different cities. We're getting the expertise and access to more expertise. Because you guys, I know, have reached out to other attorneys whenever there's been something that's not in your practice yet.
That, I think, is excuse me, one of the attributes that James and the firm look for in lawyers that they're going to bring on, is that the lawyers at the firm are people who have built a network and have connections with other people. We are not, you know, lawyers who have sort of isolated ourselves in a particular area of practice and wait for things to come to us. We are, you know, by nature, outgoing and looking to develop clients and also develop networks for referrals, not just lawyers, but CPAs and valuation experts and anybody across the board who a small business might find helpful.
Well, and that is really that entrepreneurial model that, you know, the startup, the university spin out, the mom and pop, the early stage company that's relocated here, it's being able to plug into a community of resources. And that's an interesting model because I might get a referral to another attorney from the large law firm, but they weren't as quick to say, well, here's three CPAs. Or here is this, because they were focused on the billable hours, those relationships, and strictly the legal aspect of my business.
Sure, and that has to be something that you you have to have a quiver full of expertise as a startup lawyer. I mean, you know, you've got to know something about the taxation issues to help the client select the right entity. You've got to know something about intellectual property, because every startup company these days comes in, virtually everyone, with some sort of intellectual property, and it's across the board, so you've got to know how to protect it. You've got to know a little bit about financing, because they're all going to bring money, and you've got to know something about the UCC usually, because they may have assets that they're going to pledge as collateral for a loan. So, you know, you see a broad area of practice, and you've got to know enough to get them through those waters safely
and point them in the right direction. And that's what I mean. That's why I always, like I say, I understand enough about law to put the business perspective on it, but I also know enough to, as my law professor said in grad school, you're not a lawyer. You always call a lawyer when you don't know what to do. And that's what, you know, that's the important things in working with the clients. But it's also important, I tell my clients, that your lawyer also be able to understand the business issues, because they can answer a legal question, yes or no, But can they answer it in the context of the business issue that's there and frame it that way? And that gives a different answer a lot of times.
And that's probably the place where we try to bring the most value. I mean, most lawyers can, you know, almost any lawyer can set up your entity for you. But picking the right one, answering questions about setting up an employee stock option plan. Do you want to give equity grants to your new employees? What kind of lease are we taking here? Should I buy an office building? I mean, those are questions that a business advisor of any kind should be able to answer for their client. And as lawyers, we try to differentiate ourselves by being able to answer those questions and help guide the clients through business issues and not strictly legal issues alone.
Well, you're balancing that practice building, that advising the clients, and that with the Forest Firm, you have your entrepreneurial hat with Small Cakes, so, and then you have your family obligations. So balancing that, how does that flow? And tell us about that year of being a stay-at-home dad. Because that's bound to make working with startups really more effective.
I think, not that I would compare a one-year-old to any particular client in general, no client set, but developing patience is something that certainly is a skill that I had a little bit of, and I think I gained a lot more of during that year. When I was leaving a big law practice, I was more than anything excited to have a little bit more free time, to myself. And that turned out to be a myth, and I think people probably told me that was going to be a myth. And I said, oh, no, that, the kid naps.
He sleeps, yeah.
Right? So I figured during nap time, I'll have all this time to
do the laundry, clean up after what he did, fix his lunch.
Exactly. All of those. Maybe I thought I would get him to help me with that.
You were
going to
write the great American novel while you napped.
It was, writing was something I thought I would be able to do more of. I took a big selection of books with me when we moved to Columbus. I took, a whole list of stuff that I thought, I have a year, I'm going to give myself this year. I'm going to be a stay-at-home dad, and I'm going to accomplish all of these things. And really, the only thing I accomplished was staying home with
my son, raising a
one-year-old. I think he's wonderful. I'm biased. But yes, it was challenging, there's no doubt, and I think anybody who stays at home with a child, they'll say, especially for the first time, they'll say they have newfound respect for anybody who does that. And some people are cut out for it. I think I did an okay job. He still has all his limbs. So I'll give myself credit for that. But it was really difficult. And I don't think I would, I would go back to it because I love him if it was something I needed to do. But I don't think I would, by choice, go back to being a stay-at-home parent, especially since I have two now and it would be.
So you spent a year taking care of your son, and then you decided to launch two babies in Small Cakes locations, which I always liken starting your business to teaching a child, giving birth, get him to crawl, get him to talk, get him to walk. So explain that experience and why Small Cakes? Why bakeries? What drew you to that franchise? And all of those kind of things.
I think like a lot of businesses, there was a certain amount of happenstance involved. I have two business partners who are good friends of mine, but they were good friends of mine before they were business partners. And we are, a couple of guys back then in our 30s. They'll want me to say they're still in their 30s, even though I have crossed that threshold.
You're the elder statesman.
I'm the elder statesman of the group. Yeah, they'll be happy to hear me say that. And we, like guys of a certain age, we talked about opening a business, and it was usually a bar, right? We sort of thought.
I was going to say that was not. Cupcakes was not the first.
No, I won't say that we were, the three of us were at home testing out our own cupcake recipes before we decided to launch the business. But we were food guys. We loved the Durham restaurant scene in particular. We all live in South Durham, and everybody here knows it's a great food scene, and we love the craft cocktail scene. I mean, just the sense of place that those really interesting businesses gave us.
You looked around at the restaurant. You looked at the food business, one of the highest failure rates of any type of business you can go into, and thought, okay, cupcakes.
Well, again, this
other than eating them, have you ever even baked them before?
You know, I think once or twice I have probably baked cupcakes, but I definitely like to eat cupcakes. And, you know, I mean, who doesn't like cupcakes, right? It seems almost like a foolproof business model, although none of us ever thought that for sure. But we, so we had talked to a friend of a friend who we met by chance. And so Small Cakes is a national brand, right? There are 100. And when we opened the Durham location, I think there were 80 or 90 locations around the country, and now they're up to 120 plus, including some international locations. So we talked to a friend of a friend who had opened a location outside of Atlanta, and he said he was a restaurant guy. He had his own restaurant and bar in Atlanta also, and said, this is an interesting business. They, you know, it's not overly complicated, right? I mean, we essentially have one product to learn about.
Hopefully more than one flavor.
We do, depending on which store, we'll do between 15 and 18 flavors every day.
Okay.
And we have, you know, upwards of 200 different recipes that we use. So if there's a cupcake flavor you want, we've got it, including chicken and waffles, margarita. Okay. we do a barbecue.
The chicken and
cupcake.
Waffles in the South is appropriate. I'm not sure how that does in New York City. But.
I think that's actually interesting that you say that, because one of the benefits of this this brand, Small Cakes, is that we have the ability to really decide what flavors we choose. There's no real corporate control from the national level. We
so
get
there's
a license.
Here's the list, and you get to pick the flavors, or do you come up with your own?
We can do that also. Okay. Yeah. No, we can add in our own flavors. So, which is a nice thing to do for our bakers. I mean, our bakers are very creative. We have two great head bakers who are excellent decorators and like to test out new flavors. And so we can really pick whatever flavors we want. We can play around with cupcake parfaits we make. We make whoopie pies. We do pound cake.
Okay. And your Durham location is where?
The Durham location is in the Woodcroft Shopping Center, so in South Durham at Hope Valley Road.
Right. And then the Cary location we were talking before the show is on 55.
Yes, so there's a new shopping center on 55 at O'Kelly Chapel Road, right where the 540 interchange with 55 is.
Where the Bolarama
is right next
restaurant
to Frank's,
bowling movie
exactly.
thing is, right?
Frank's Cinnabowl. We look right onto the plaza in front of Frank's Cinnabowl, which is a great place, by the way. If you haven't seen a movie there, it's got the reclining chairs, and they'll bring food to you and everything, and stop by for a cupcake afterwards.
And that's his promo for the show. And so, when you got in there and you were evaluating franchises, I mean, I had every confidence you could look at the legal agreements and dissect them and know what was great and what wasn't. But what was it about having a mix of freedom or having the business model, that black box of things already figured out 90%? Because I tell my clients it's never 100%. What was it that attracted you to being franchising versus a license of something or start from scratch, a bar or something?
So it was, I think you hit it on the head. It's that combination of there's a great idea and we knew the product was good, right? We tried the cupcakes before we
had the recipe.
Right. So we said, these are the best cupcakes we've ever eaten, number one. So we knew that the product, that the recipes were going to be good. And the fact that we really didn't have a whole lot of corporate control, so we could make the decisions about what locations we put the stores in, what hours are we open, what flavors are we going to carry, what are our, how many people are we going to staff it with, what's our pricing going to be.
So a startup with structure. So you had enough freedom to put your personality and your identity on it.
Exactly.
But it wasn't McDonald's or someone saying, okay, it has to be in this zip code, in this area, or this type of.
And here's what the store has to look like, and here's what the layout is, and the soda machine goes here, what have you. So we went for training for a couple of days to a location in Texas. My two partners and I, we showed up, rolled up our sleeves, and learned how to bake an iced cupcake. So even though we had never really gotten
you
together
to that before. Have you ever sold any of the cupcakes you've baked?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yes. Yeah. And,
true test of your skills.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, on many, many occasions. So we, I was the primary operations partner because I was coming back from being a stay-at-home dad and escaping with my life from that occupation. So I was the day-to-day operator. So I was in the store, the Durham store we opened first.
You were the shirt sleeves, roll-up, sweat equity. Testing,
yes, but
debugging, all of that kind of stuff. Not bugs, but
right. I had to test taste test all, every flavor of cupcake, which is, you know, when you've got 200, that's not a small task. But my partners are both very hands-on also.
Okay.
So we all, especially at the beginning of, the couple of months leading up to the opening of either location, it's all hands on deck, right? So we are in, in the store every day. We did a lot of the build out of the Durham location ourselves. We were hands on, on the construction.
Tool belt on and hammer and all that stuff.
We sure did. Yeah. We did a lot of the painting. We put up, we did the counter install, we installed cabinets, mirrors, trim work, a lot of things that, that we wanted to save some money on. You know, we were opening the first location on a shoestring. I mean, we really had a low budget for it. We did bootstrap it. You know, we opened the doors and, there was a line out the door on the first day and we said, Thank you, Lord. and because, bank accounts were low, the company bank.
Your investors were Visa, MasterCard, and American Express.
Something like that, yes. So we definitely took a big deep breath when right before we pulled the chain on the open sign. And
so how long between opening the Durham location and then deciding, oh, we're going to do this again?
So interestingly, we located the and decided we wanted to open in the Cary store before we opened the Durham store.
Oh, okay.
But the Cary store was a brand new shopping center, right? That
it was
Park
dirt.
Commons. It was it had not come out of the ground yet. And when we signed up for that space, it was going to be a year before we could get into it and start our build out.
Okay.
So we decided we don't want to wait that long. We had momentum. Let's get it started and let's find a smaller space. Let's do a test run. And that was really why that was such a shoestring budget, is because we said, all right, now we've decided to go from zero cupcake shops to two cupcake shops. Let's do this one with a lot of sweat equity. And so we built that one out, a lot of it with our own hands.
Well, when we come back from the break, I'm going to ask you this question before we go, but I want your answer after. What are the biggest lessons you've learned by bootstrapping it, adding the second location, and taking the approach that you've been taking? And you're listening to WCOM FM 103.5 Chapel Hill and Carrboro, your favorite station on the dial. This is Focus on Business, and we'll be right back. Focus on Business would like to thank our underwriter, Close HR Connections. Ann Close of Close HR Connections has been on the show, and she is a great supporter of WCOM FM and Focus on Business. Visit their website, closehrconnections.com. Focus on Business is underwritten by Focus Resources. Their website is focusresourcesinc.com. That's focusresourcesinc.com. If you would like to become an underwriter for Focus on Business or any of the WCOM FMLP 103.5 programs or the station, visit the WCOMFM.org website for information on underwriting shows, becoming an individual sponsor, becoming a Golden Voice sponsor, or how to volunteer with the station. That's WCOMFM.org. We're on the air because you care and you underwrite our programs.
There's a man down on the corner holding a sign. You know, I think he's right. Says the end of time. Saw a newsman on the TV in a Colorado town, telling how some madman shot innocent people down. Gotta hate to think what lies ahead. We don't get back to the Bible, start doing what Jesus said. We gotta pray like we've never prayed before. We gotta fight like a soldier in a war. Take a stand, every woman and every man down on our knees. We gotta beg and plead. We can't give up. We can't give in till God blesses America.
what old Thomas Jefferson would say if he could come back from the grave and talk to us today. Would he tell us that this country is just what he had in mind? Or would repent and turn to God be the words he cried? All of this low living comes with a high cost, and America needs to wake up before everything is lost. We gotta pray like we've never prayed before. We gotta fight like a soldier in a war. Take a stand, every woman and every man down on our knees. We gotta beg and plead. We can't give up. We can't give in till God blesses America again. It's time to put the Ten Commandments back on the courthouse square. Put God's word back in our schools, open every day with prayer. Let all the preachers start preaching against sin, and maybe then, God bless America again. Maybe then. God will bless America again.
And we're back. You're listening to WCOM FM 103.5 Chapel Hill and Carrboro. This is Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland, and my guest is Andrew Fisher. And we're talking about entrepreneurship and the law and work-life balance. And before the break, I asked Andrew what his biggest learning points were from starting his franchises and the practice of law. And so, Andrew, I'm just going to let you take that away and go anywhere you want with it.
Okay, sure. So, you know, it's pretty clear to me that the lesson that I learned, or the element that I learned in starting a business that was more important than any of the others, was the team building element. You know, as a lawyer, you get a lot of people who enter the law because it can be a solitary profession. I mean, you can be a solo practitioner. You can be the only person in your company. You can be the secretary, the person who does all the dishes in the sink and everything.
I have a company mom, manager of operational messes.
Okay,
that's one of the official titles.
Wow, we need to designate one of those. Unless that's me, I guess. So, you know, moving from the law into starting a company like this, you know, I think we're up to 17 or 18 employees now between the two locations. And, you know, building that team makes you realize how important it is to interview people well, you know, how to be a good judge of character and judge of talent in a relatively short period of time. I can't spend 4 or 5 days interviewing most of the candidates. And then, you know, getting the right people in is just critical to your success, because you can then delegate your certain responsibilities. You know, if you are the operational director like I was, that's everything. And, you know, I needed to be able to delegate things. And, you know, there are some bumps. And in retail, there's a little bit more turnover than you find in a lot of other areas, which is understandable. I mean, our workforce is generally younger and either in high school or in college. There are people in transitional phases. They're moving away. They are starting another career. They're in school and school starts up. So we are constantly interviewing and constantly hiring. And that's a challenge, number one. And it's also an opportunity to take what we've learned from the people who have come through the company and bring in the best people we can find at the time. And that is the most important element of the company, is bringing in the right people.
Well, and that's why when I'm working with my clients that do franchises, they think, well, if it's a business in a box, I said, well, yes, it's a business in the box, except you're doing the hiring, you're doing the recruiting, you're doing the performance measurement, you're doing all of that, and how well you do that determines how well that business in a box works.
Absolutely. I mean, unless you're going to be, if you're going to be the person on the spot, if you're going to be in the location there every day, all the time, and able to keep an eye on what's going on, not from a sort of
captaining the ship.
Be the leader who's there all the time. I mean, that is in some senses easier than doing what we're trying to do, which is, you know, empower people to act in separate locations on their own and make decisions and make sure that our customers are happy and make sure that we're producing the best cupcakes and the best product that that anybody produces in the area.
So with that, you know, one of the things is that learning curve and the training. So how does it affect your capacity with that amount of turnover? And I was talking to one of the hotels in the area. And he was talking about having a 67% turnover on the front desk. And he said, you know, we're never as efficient as we want to be there because of the training. And then just about the time people are getting into the groove, they're gone and those kind of things. So
yep.
How does it affect your operations and all of those kind of things?
You know, I think it affects what we're looking for when we're hiring. And because, with the technology that most retail establishments can use today, you know, we use an iPad-based register system right. That takes 5 minutes to learn, right? There's just not much training. It's push
it's
button.
Intuitive.
It's very intuitive.
It's intuitive for the age group you're hiring.
That we're hiring. we've hired from many age groups and everybody. You know,
okay.
That's one area that's easy for people to get through. So what we really need is somebody who comes with a great customer service focused attitude and the ability to interact with people and, you know, be happy when they're working, right? So, I mean, we're a cupcake shop. It should be fun, and it is fun, I think, and we're lucky in that we've got great core team members, and, you know, even the people who've come through and moved on, they've left for college. We've had a couple of, you know, great people who've worked our counter who have been terrific assets to the company and then have gone off to Appalachian State or other colleges after they finished high school. It's great to have them there. They came with a great bubbly personality and an outgoing nature and just the willingness to have a little conversation with our customers. You know, I tell everybody in pretty much every interview, listen, customers walk into our shop, they're going to be happy, right? They're there for cupcakes. What's not to like, right? So our job is to take that happiness and make sure that they're a little bit happier when they walk
out.
And
they're on a sugar high when they're late.
they may be on a sugar high, you know, and that can vary. That gets to the other part of the job because the kids might get on a little bit of a sugar high, and then we got cleaning to do. So we take pride in making sure our shop is spotless.
So are they eating the profits?
You know, I think, like the owners, our employees, after 4 or 5 weeks, their cupcake consumption tends to drop off a little bit. It's just like if you're in a pizza shop,
right.
You know, I can't imagine that 6 months in that you're eating pizza every other
week.
Yeah,
I've heard that from you know, Baskin's, Robbins, mm-hmm. French, you know, all of those kind of things. Any kind of franchise that's food-oriented, by the time you've lived it 24/7, 365. Yeah, that's not necessarily. You want to go out to the Chinese restaurant after working in the pizza place.
For sure. Although I will say I really look forward, like I said, to trying the new recipes that our mm-hmm. bakers come up with. I mean, that's always something that's, even if it's just a forkful, it's, you know, our cake itself, you know, a lot of cupcake shops will focus on the icing or the presentation, but I think we like cake, and so I think our cake is better than anybody else's.
Well, I
like trying
yeah.
our new cake recipes.
Well, and there's something that's coming out that's very clear about that is the customer orientation. So it's the customer first, which is what every business has to be thinking about. And I heard an article this week about my experience with my internet service provider. I said called searching for signs of intelligent life in the call center. But, you know, you're looking at those kind of things, and it's like I walk in and I'm really in a great mood and I want to buy a cupcake. Sometimes you walk into a bakery and it's not a great experience. And so you're focusing, and the business model is still to make that a great experience, not just eating the cupcake, but all the way through that process.
You know, we know that we should and we do spend marketing dollars in a lot of different avenues, but that there's nothing that can compare to your cousin or your, you know, office mate or somebody saying, hey, I just tried out this new cupcake place, and this that is awesome. Buzz. Or even better, bringing some cupcakes in. So we do Water Cooler Wednesdays, pretty much every other Wednesday now, where we'll have people comment on our Facebook pages. And the workplace that hashtags their workplace the most, they have the most comments on the post, gets a free dozen cupcakes, and we bring them by, or they come and pick them up. And that, to me, you know, people in an office gathering around a box of small cakes, cupcakes, I mean, that leaves an impression.
So what is your Facebook page? Because I know our listeners are going to want to start participating in that.
Sure. It's it's Small Cakes Cary or Small Cakes Durham. We have two separate Facebook pages. If you search for Small Cakes Cary or Small Cakes Durham on Facebook, you'll find us.
So what do you think are going to be the biggest challenges for your businesses? So not just Small Cakes, but the legal firm, your clients' businesses. What's everyone talking about and thinking about as we're rushing towards the end of 2016 and heading into 2017?
I think it's going to be the sort of really, I think, is a sea change of the millennial generation coming in to start taking over important roles and start developing their own businesses and their own ways of running businesses. Something we deal with a lot in Small Cakes with a younger demographic. There's a different mindset, really. I think that and each generation says this about the next generation. I think, and it's true.
Well, I mean, I know I see it in real estate, the trend going towards the smaller houses, the tiny tiny house nation type thing. And so there is a definite shift in how we're going to have to market to them. So the Facebook, the social media aspect of it, the buzz, those connectivity. But that's an interesting thing because it's like, I know when I started my business, the old timers said, oh, you can't do business that way. You can't stay virtual. You can't, you know, be trying to get clients in, you know, all these different states, and you had to do this and you had to do that. But I think you're right. Those millennials are going to upend the have-tos even more than, I'll say, our generations have. And looking at how are we going to harness technology and what are we going to expect from that technology? And then how are we going to interface and find our customers?
For sure. And I think every business knows now that you've got to have a social media presence and it's got to be strong. And that's one thing actually that Small Cakes and a Forest Firm have very much in common is that they both, you know, at both places, we spend an awful lot of time and people hours getting the message out there on social media and crafting those messages well. So that reaches the millennials. That really reaches everybody, I think. And then, you know, the next step is, how do you up the ante on that social media? Just going from social media to what you can provide. So,
and the 300 types of social media sites that you can hit and which ones are working and where are your customers and all those kind of things.
That's an existing challenge, I think, for every business right now is, you know, where do you put that time in? Is it is there a new site that comes up? How soon is too early to adopt? Should you be... should you be using, I actually have this sort of personal debate with myself about my Facebook page, which, you know, I've been on for a number of years, but do I want to turn that into a business development page? Also, do I want to talk about my practice there, my legal practice? I certainly used it to talk about Small Cakes when we were opening the businesses, but I don't know, part of me feels like I'm really just trying to communicate with my family and friends, and that's a place for kid pictures. And
I hit Facebook to monitor my nieces originally because they were under 13 when they got their sites.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was those kind of things. What are they doing? Who are they talking to? What information are they giving out? All those kind of things. And then it's just gradually become a platform to share my working on faith content, I call them God promptings, blog posts, those kind of things. And then what articles and things are going on or that kind of thing. So it is a way to connect. And it's a mix. Some of my high school, classmates are out there that I hadn't seen in decades, and it's just that interesting mix of how that interfaces and then where do you split between the work and the life and using those types of things.
For sure. I think that line, so one of the things that millennials will bring to the workforce is that line will be more blurred than ever, right? I mean, they're moving from you get a job at a corporation, you work in that corporation, maybe, you know, for Generation X like myself, and it was never 30 or 40 years that you're going to spend at the same location. It was every 5 or 6 or 7 years you're going to move on.
And see, I'm the last year of the baby boomers.
Okay.
So, you know, I came in and was more, I had no qualms about if I got bored or, you know, some ethical issue came up, changing jobs. And then it's like, which is very millennial. I guess I was just the last millennium in that one. But it's those kind of things, and that's that. What are we willing to sacrifice? What are we willing to do? What are we willing to settle for? to some extent, like you were talking about the lawyers coming out, this is what they trained to do, so they're going to stick with it.
Yeah, but I think the millennials are much more willing to take a risk on something else and to develop really what seems like a personal brand to me. I mean, I think they see that they're so steeped in pop culture and the speed with which information travels these days that they recognize that, you know, they're creating themselves, you know, in a virtual social media world.
They're almost more real online than they are in the real world sometimes.
I think they can be, for sure. I mean, it gives a lot of people that
because
that
they
freedom.
Interact. They don't necessarily call you. They text you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those kind of things. And so there's more to know about them when you go online than you may have had in a conversation.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, there's no question I learned things about my nieces, older nieces and nephews online that I haven't, you know, learned to that I wouldn't have learned from them from a phone call or seeing them in person. But I think, you know, understanding that millennials put that kind of emphasis on their online persona and are, you know, more or less comfortable with being freelancers, generally speaking, in terms of they're not going to come into a company and assume that the company becomes their world for.
Well, they're an independent contractor from their mindset.
Of course, yeah.
They're not an employee for life. I'm here until what I need or what my goal was is met, and then I move on to the next one.
And you know, that's a problem and a benefit, I think. You know, they're looking at self-improvement, but they're also asking a lot of times, what can you do for me, right? What are you going to give for me? What are you going to give to me? It's not...
What's in it for me?
Right. It's not really, well, here's your paycheck and a hearty
and
pat on the back, and here's your cubicle, get to work. You know, that just doesn't work anymore. And I think that's not all bad, but it is a shift for, you know, those of us who are older, and that is sort of what we thought. Is you were very excited to get
the elder statesman.
Right. That's going to be tough. My partners are going to start calling me that, which
I know. That's why I repeated it. But I mean, we are managing generations: the baby boomers, Generation X, millennials, Generation Y, whatever the next group is going to be. And the broader that spectrum gets, and the more the motivation varies. I mean, you can find an example of the same personality or the same motivators in any generation. It's managing those performances within those and recruiting the right ones that mesh well together in your businesses. That's critical.
That definitely gets back to, you know, learning what people make, which people and which personality types make good employees, and learning how to spot those positive characteristics and spot the negative, the warning signs for some of the employees. That I think, you know, being a good hirer, a good interviewer, and a good hirer has always been a critical skill. But I think now more than ever, with people feeling like they are in this freelance model economy, and new employees are willing to make a jump to another job. More or less at the drop of a hat, you know, you've got to, as an employer, you've got to be good at spotting the right people, bringing in the right talent, and then, you know, keeping them happy. I mean,
right. And constantly aware of their satisfaction.
That's a hard part for us. You know, we've got a great management team in place at Small Cakes, but as owners who aren't on site every day, you know, keeping track of what's the mindset, how is the team morale, that can be a challenge for sure. It takes time. And that's one lesson I've learned, is that there isn't much that can substitute for being there on the ground, face-to-face conversations. You know, phone calls are good, but you know, being in the shop for a couple of hours at a time is one of the best ways, and really the only way, to get an accurate feel for what the ethos is in the shop at any given time.
And you can feel free to just say, this question is not my area, I don't want to answer it. We have a lot of things that are changing in the HR world. The new overtime rule coming in effect December 1st,
yep,
which is going to be impacting the small cakes, the retailers,
yep,
and those kind of things. With those kind of regulatory changes, in the Affordable Health Care Act, all of those kind of things playing in, how much of that is a concern? How much of that is an opportunity for changing business models and looking at and re-examining what's going on in a business?
I would say in the short term, it's Very much a concern, the overtime rules and what looks like we are creeping closer to a higher minimum wage. We pay above minimum wage to start, but a $15 hour minimum wage would be a significant change for us and would cut into, I'm happy to say the stores are profitable, but that would cut significantly into our profits and would change what we're looking for in employees. I mean, I feel like, if you're paying someone $10 an hour or $11 an hour, and then you're going to move to paying them $15 an hour, you should expect more, and they should be expecting to give more and come with they should be providing more value to the business because they're taking more value from the business. So I think that's a business owner's mindset, right?
Right.
It makes sense to me, but that will be a big challenge for us. On the Obamacare side, we provide health care for our full-time employees. We offer it. I don't know if there are any other businesses of 17. You'd be hard-pressed to find other businesses that offer health care to their employees the size of like ours, I think, just based on
anecdotally. Well, they're being pressed into doing it. It's because the penalty is going to get larger and larger.
Sure. They'll have to, the individuals will have to get covered. But, we as a company offering it, we think that's the right thing to do. I mean, we always knew that our employees were going to be important. I think, the lesson I've learned is that building that team and getting the right employees in is the most important aspect of the business. And part of that is part of the way that we demonstrate our commitment to them is to offer health insurance. And I think it shows that we really care about, number one, their health, and number two, we want to make sure they're protected in case something terrible should happen. And we think it makes us attractive as an employer also.
So do you think there's a third small cakes on the horizon?
We are keeping our eyes open for sure. We learned a lot from the first two stores, we aren't jumping into anything, especially since I have left the sort of day-to-day operational role and
stop being
back to the practice.
A stay-at-home dad, life of leisure, and back to
exactly back to law. Right in my pajamas all day, right?
Just because you didn't have time to change.
Exactly, that's true. Yes, I think. People really love the cupcakes, and
right.
There are a lot of locations around the triangle that I think would be perfect for another small cakes. There are new small cakes under other owners that have opened in Greensboro and one in north of Charlotte. And so, we'd opened the first North Carolina location. I think there are five now, and there are more on the drawing board also. So it's a concept that works well here, and I think it's a good business to grow. So
do you ever have any concerns that you're so specialized that it's cupcakes that if this is just a fad, that what happens next?
Yeah, so that was the first business question we asked when we looked at this franchise or any other single product franchise. So, but then you've got Auntie Annie's or any kind of hot dog place or they're single product. So, cupcakes. Are they a fad? I think that, right when we were negotiating our lease for the first location, there was
And the heart palpitation started.
definitely. When you're signing the personal guarantee on the leases, then the heart palpitations really start. But also, in the middle of those negotiations, there was a big cupcake bakery. I think they had 20 to 30 locations around the country called Crumbs. I don't know if you remember hearing about that in the news, but they went bankrupt right while we were negotiating our lease, and the landlords called us up and said,
not a good sign for me.
it wasn't a good sign for us either, but they had a different business model. They were on Madison Avenue. They were on Rodeo Drive. They spent, they spent a ton of money on their real estate.
There's infrastructure, the things that matter some but aren't the most important.
Right.
Where they overspent.
Right. So we said we've learned, that was never our model to begin with. It wasn't to be we're a gourmet cupcake bakery, but we're not, we don't have to put ourselves, in the most expensive retail space in the triangle. So, the model's working so far. And I think that as long as we keep our eyes on that, keeping our costs in line and using our good business practices, we'll do great.
Well, the Forest Firm business model is working, and they can visit your website, which is forestfirm.com.
Forestfirm.com, exactly.
And it's two R's in Forest.
Two R's in Forest.
And then your Facebook pages are Small Cakes Cary.
Small Cakes Cary and Small Cakes Durham. We also have a web page that's smallcakesnc.com.
And so we've been talking about social media, so let's make sure we give them some social media, too. So it's at Forest Firm?
At Forest Firm
on Twitter.
Yep. And I'm at Andrew B. Fisher on Twitter.
And if there's one thing that you could tell anybody thinking about being an attorney, the practice of law, becoming an entrepreneur, what is that one? Or being a stay-at-home dad, what is that one thing you'd want to leave them with?
I think, you know, do your research. And to me, that means talking to people and honestly and as many people as you can and being honest about what you are looking for in a career and what's important to you. But talk to as many people as you can. Throw the idea out there. Hey, I'm considering going to law school. What do you think? Talk to lawyers. And they'll give you, for the most part, I think, unvarnished opinions.
I think I've actually met more lawyers not working at a law firm than I have lawyers working at a law firm.
There is.
It's a great starting point.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a trend of lawyers finding something else to do, and then, like me, some of them come back.
And some of them do both. Sorry, right. You have your day job and you run your entrepreneurial companies outside of it. So I want to thank Andrew for being on the show. Again, that's forestfirm.com, Small Cakes, Cary.
Small Cakes Cary and Small Cakes Durham
and smallcakesnc.com.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone, until next time, stay focused on the important things in life. Strickland of Focus Resources with today's focus point. What is the capacity of your business to sustain a certain sales number? Want $1 million in sales, but only have the team and the resources to hit 100,000? What are we going to do about that? By understanding your capacity, pricing, quantity, hours available, how your team works, you can arrive at the optimal target for your business's sales for now. And then you can make a plan to put new capacity in place to grow your business. It's important to recognize capacity building takes time. So don't underestimate the cost or the time it will take to grow your business. For more information, visit FocusResourcesInc.com. Focus on Business would like to thank our underwriter, Close HR Connections. Ann Close of Close HR Connections has been on the show, and she is a great supporter of WCOM-FM and Focus on Business. Visit their website, closehrconnections.com.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away. American, where at least I know I'm free, and I won't forget the man who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love